House come to order. Would the members please register their presence by voting? Does any member
fail to register
their presence? Clerk may take the quorum.
Thirty-seven present, three absent.
Mr. Miller.
Speaker, Representative Gardner has excused McCall the House today, although he did a fast flight and he's back. I'll move and ask unanimous consent that any other absent members be shown as excused on official state business.
Without objection, so ordered. Mr. Speckman. Without objection, so ordered. Please rise for prayer. My Father Joseph Saba, the Catholic Church.
We lift up our hearts to you, Lord, Most High, Holy God. We thank you, accept our words, preserve us and hear our prayer. You come and deliver us. You give space and freedom to people. You make the sun rise over good and bad alike. You have given the earth to our keeping. You have created us as man and woman, as people standing shoulder to shoulder, to live in care and trouble, in joy and sorrow, but always towards you. And so, Heavenly Father, we ask you to guide us as deliberations are made here today, and decisions be made for the common good of everyone involved, and according to thy will. Amen.
Clerk, please certify to the correctness of the previous day's journal.
As Chief Clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 57th day.
Mr. Miller.
Speaker, I'll move and ask unanimous consent this body approve the journal as certified by the Chief Clerk for the 57th day.
No objection, so ordered. Mr. Miller.
Mr. Speaker, I might make note of one point. During the course of the morning, the Chief Clerk and the pages will be circulating what looks like a reproduction of the Declaration of Independence. What this is, there's the Veterans of Foreign Wars and the Foreign Legion are sponsoring a wagon train, which are apparently part of a bicentennial project that they're heading for Philadelphia and are apparently going to arrive in Philadelphia on July 4th. And the VFW here in Alaska would like to have our names on it, so with a minimum with an absence of funny sayings, please sign the thing as it goes past, and your name will be in Philadelphia on July 4th.
Brings us to introduction of guests or the guests to be introduced to the House. Representative Haugen. Mr. Haugen. Guest, Mr. Carr.
Mr. Speaker, sometimes we've gotten so civilized we forget where food comes from. There are some people who don't forget that and who try to work very hard to make sure that there's always going to be available for us. One of those is Mr. Bill Scarborough, who's with the Agricultural Extension Service, University of Alaska at Fairbanks in Calgary Beach.
Representative Rudd.
Mr. Speaker, a friend of mine and constituent is here today. I'm very happy to see her here. She's Barbara Block. She's a member of the Anchorage School Board Educational Concerns Committee, and she's the president of the Huffman Elementary School PTA, and she's the co-chairman of the Service Hanshu Community School, all in Anchorage. She's in Gallery A. I think we have more students here from the Alaska Association of School Governments. I'm sorry that I don't have their names today, but maybe I could ask them all to stand up and be recognized at any rate.
Mr. Greening.
Mr. Speaker, in Gallery A, I see a good friend of mine from the lovely community of Port Graham. His name is Jim LaBelle.
other guests? Does the clerk have messages from the governor?
Dear Mr. Speaker, the purpose of this letter is to inform you that the option agreement between the State of Alaska and Alaska Methodist University has been amended by co-signers Robert K. Dellenbach, President, Alaska Methodist University, and J.S. Hammond, Governor, State of Alaska. The amendment extends the option deadline from March 15, 1976 to March 29, 1976. Enclosed for your information is a copy of that amendment. Signed sincerely, J.S. Hammond, Governor. I have no further messages from the Governor, Mr. Speaker.
The agreement was furnished with that letter, and we will refer it to the Education Committee, and if anybody wants to review it, the actual written agreement, they can find it at that source. Does the clerk have other messages?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Does the clerk have messages from the other House?
Mr. Speaker, the Senate accepts the invitation of the House to meet in joint session on the following dates. March 11 at 11 a.m. for presentation by the Capitol Site Selection Committee. March 15 at 11 a.m. to hear U.S. Senator Ted Stevens. March 26 at 11 a.m. to hear U.S. Senator Mike Gravel. The Senate has passed the following, and they are transmitted herewith for consideration. Committee substitute for Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 66 by the Resources Committee relating to North Slope Natural Gas.
Commerce.
Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 77 by the Commerce Committee relating to the establishment of a comprehensive and meaningful agricultural policy for the State of Alaska.
Commerce.
Committee substitute for Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 85 by the Resources Committee relating to the impact on Alaska of a Trans-Canada gas transportation system.
Commerce.
Senate Bill Number 495 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor. An act relating to Alaska National Guard pay and the Alaska Employment Security Act.
State Affairs.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 564, Finance, by the Finance Committee. An act providing for the issuance of general obligation bonds in the amount of $58,935,000 for the purpose of paying the cost of constructing, repairing, equipping, and upgrading school facilities and water reservoirs and providing for an effective date.
Education and Finance.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Clerk, have general communications?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Clerk, have reports of standing committees?
The Committee on Health, Education, and Social Services has had Senate Bill 203 amended relating to school attendance under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it do pass. Report was signed by Mrs. Sullivan, Chairman, concurred in by Sullivan, Hackney, Ostrowski, Parr, H. Byrne, and Davis. Senate Bill 203 amended has no further referral. The Committee on Health, Education, and Social Services has had Senate Bill 272 amended relating to the operation of food service and concession stands by blind and handicapped persons under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it be replaced with House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 272 and that it do pass. The report was signed by Mrs. Sullivan, Chairman, concurred in by Sullivan, Davis, Hackney, Ostrowski, and H. Byrne. Senate Bill 272 amended has a further referral to Finance. The Committee on Health, Education, and Social Services has had House Concurrent Resolution 97 relating to state purchases of drugs under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mrs. Sullivan, Chairman, concurred in by Sullivan, Hackney, Ostrowski, Parr, H. Byrne, and Davis. House Concurrent Resolution Number 97 has no further referral. The Committee on Community and Regional Affairs has had House Bill 587 relating to exemptions from municipal special assessments under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 587 with the same title and that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Cotton, Chairman, concurred in by Cotton, O.C., Davis, Ostrowski, Rudd, Hackney, and Kelly. Having no recommendation, Hershberger and Freeman. House Bill 587 has a further referral to Finance. The Committee on State Affairs has had House Bill 646 relating to selection of architects, engineers, and surveyors for state projects under consideration. The members of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 646 with the same title and further recommends that it be referred to the Finance Committee. The report was signed by Mr. McKinnon, Chairman, concurred in by Miller, McKinnon, Parker, and H. Byrne. Having no recommendation, M. Byrne and Fisher. House Bill 646 has no further referral.
Mr. Anderson. House Beatties. House come to order. A finance referral will be added to committee substitute for House Bill 646.
Want me to give this to Jerry?
The Committee on State Affairs has had House Bill 756 relating to survivor benefits under the public employees' retirement system under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 756 with the same title and that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. McKinnon, Chairman, concurred in by Miller, Parker, Fisher, H. Byrne, McKinnon, and Wallace. M. Byrne signed no recommendation. House Bill 756 has a further referral to Judiciary. The Committee on State Affairs has had House Bill 847, making a special appropriation to the Department of Public Works, Division of Marine Transportation, under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. McKinnon, Chairman, concurred in by H. Byrne, Fisher, M. Byrne, Parker, Miller, McKinnon, and Wallace. House Bill 847 has a further referral to Finance. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
The clerk have reports of special committees.
No, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of resolutions.
House Concurrent Resolution Number 109 by the Judiciary Committee, requesting the Alaska Bar Association to publicize the Attorney Fee Review Committee.
Judiciary.
House Concurrent Resolution Number 110 by the Community and Regional Affairs Committee, relating to the Village Safe Water Act.
Community and Regional Affairs.
I have no further resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Clerk have bills for introduction.
House Bill Number 859 by the Select Committee on Education, an act relating to school terms.
Education and Finance.
House Bill Number 860 by the Community and Regional Affairs Committee, an act relating to the Village Safe Water Act and providing for an effective date.
Community and Regional Affairs, Finance.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us to the daily calendar. Would the clerk read the first item on the calendar?
House Bill Number 673 by Brown, Anderson, Bradley, Davis, Guy, Ida, Osterback, Swanson, and Wallace. An act making a special appropriation to the Department of Community and Regional Affairs for the Telecommunications Committee, composed of individuals representative of the regional nonprofit associations and providing for an effective date. The Committee on Community and Regional Affairs has had House Bill 673 under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it do pass with attached amendments. The report was signed by Mr. Cotton, Chairman, concurred in by Kelly, Rudd, Davis, Osee, Cotton, and Ostrowski. Mr. Freeman has no recommendation. The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 673 under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Malone, Chairman, concurred in by Malone, Cooper, Naughton, Duncan, Buchholz, Greening, and Ida. Having no recommendation, Haugen. I have one amendment on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Clerk, read the First Amendment.
Amendment number one by the Community and Regional Affairs Committee. Page 1, line 14, insert rural between V and telecommunications. Lines 14 through 16, delete authorized through October 23, 24, and 25, 1975. Insert, which advises the Governor's Office of Telecommunications in matters involving rural telecommunications policy after committee. Amendment number one by the Community and Regional Affairs Committee. Page one, line 14. Insert rural between the and telecommunications. Lines 14 through 16, delete authorized through October 23, 24, and 25, 1975. Insert, which advises the Governor's Office of Telecommunications in matters involving rural telecommunications policy after committee.
Mr. Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the amendment.
There are no objection. Amendment number one is adopted. Does the clerk have other amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Miller.
Speaker, in the absence of further amendments, I'll move and ask unanimous consent that House Bill 673 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Objections noted. Mr. Wallace.
Lines 14 through 16. Delete authorized through October 23, 24, and 25, 1975. Insert, which advises the Governor's Office of Telecommunications in matters involving rural telecommunications policy after committee.
Is the objection maintained? The objection is withdrawn. House Bill number 673 is advanced from second to third reading, placed in final passage. Clerk, read the bill for the third and final time.
House Bill Number 673 by Brown et al., an act making a special appropriation to the Department of Community and Regional Affairs for the Telecommunications Committee composed of individuals representative of the regional nonprofit associations and providing for an effective date.
Bill before you for discussion debate. Mr. Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This bill provides funds for a committee that has been lauded by many participants, including and observers, including the director and deputy director of the governor's office of telecommunications and the technical consultants on telecommunications to the Alaska legislature. There are lots of advisory committees, I suppose, but Professor Merritt, who works for this legislature, has indicated to me that this is one of the best groups that he has worked with. It was established at the request of the GOT and because of other concerns to advise the governor's office of telecommunications in many matters. It is a very active organization, and it has really had no funds to proceed with at all. Department of Community and Regional Affairs, I think Mr. Cotton can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the testimony was that they were able to find funds for one or two meetings, and GOT, which has a very strapped budget in my view, was able to fund one of the meetings, and I think the organization is very necessary. There are things that are now and will be before the legislature that are coming out of the activities of the organization. It is aiding the GOT and working with the GOT and RCA and matters involving site selection for the smaller stations, plans for further smaller stations, working with the governor's office of telecommunications and the consultants to the legislature in solving problems of the establishment of small telephone exchanges, because of course nobody wants to have a fancy earth station with only one telephone hanging on the end of it. And quite a lot of other concerns, addressing priorities as to what is needed in these areas. And this is exactly the kind of input that is badly needed in telecommunications planning, both by those in the public sector, we in the legislature and the governor's office, and in the private sector, RCA Alaska Communications. And I think that all people agree that the organization has been a great amount of help, and this relatively small amount of money, I think, is an investment that will go a long way, and I urge the passage of the legislation.
Mr. Urien.
Mr. Speaker, it seems to me that it's rather unusual for us to fund a privately formed committee such as this. Appears it would be much more appropriate if we formed the committee legislatively and then funded it. Have we ever done this before like this?
Mr. Brown.
Speaker, Mr. Urien's concerns, I believe, were the reason for the Community and Regional Affairs Amendment, which makes it clear that this organization is being funded because of its activities working in an advisory capacity with government and not because it is any kind of an organization established by private individuals. And that is the function that it's serving. And I'm sure that the members of Community and Regional Affairs and of the Finance Committee who have had communications from the Governor's Office of Telecommunications know about the function that this committee is serving in a governmental capacity to advise people within government. And that was the major reason for the Community and Regional Affairs Amendment, and I did support the amendment when I testified before the committee.
Mr. Urien.
Mr. Speaker, but the fact remains that this committee was not formed under legislative authority. It was formed by a group of people getting together. And now they've come to us and asked for funding. I would think it would be much more appropriate if we would put it on the books that we've established this committee and then fund them.
Mr. Speaker, there are lots of organizations that have been funded by us who were not created by legislative authority. They were created by executive authority, including the Governor's Office of Telecommunications and many other organizations within the governor's office and within the various departments under the authority of the governor. And this committee was not set up just by a private separate organization. It was set up because a need was recognized, and it was asked by the, I believe, by the governor's office of telecommunications and by the through the activities of the subcommittee on telecommunications of the legislative council, this legislature in the interim, that there was a serious need for input from the rural areas throughout the state, the people who are being impacted by these programs and yet had no clear voice in the policy addressed to the programs. So this is not just something that was volunteered on an unsolicited basis by the AFN or anyone else. It was created because there was a need recognized before the establishment of the committee by the Governor's Office of Telecommunications and the Legislative Subcommittee.
Mr. Smith.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. In a strange sort of way, I'm glad to see this bill before us because it improves my batting average. The last time we had a appropriation measure for this function in this chamber towards the end of last session, I made a number of predictions for which my distinguished colleague from Fairbanks suggested I should be named Ted Dixon rather than Smith. But there were four elements of that. First, I said that the project for which that money was appropriated, i.e. the smaller stations, would not be operating by the time we convened. Best estimate now is May of this year for the first ones of those to go online. I suggested that the cost of $50,000 would have substantial overruns. The agreed-on cost as of last October is $71,000 per station. I suggested that we'd have an operating budget in excess of $500,000. The governor's request for the Governor's Office of Telecommunications, $514,700. And finally, I suggested that we'd probably have a supplemental budget request before us. And I guess this does it in a way, even though it's labeled a special appropriation. I'm not opposed to the advisory committee. I think it's probably a good idea. Based on the track record, those guys need all the help they can get. But I just think that in an appropriation of $514,000 operating budget for a program that isn't yet operating, there should be $20,000 for this purpose. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker, many of the things that the representative from Anchorage has said are correct, but of course they don't relate to the debate that he referred to in the previous session. The activities of this committee, which we're asking for funding here, in addition to the other activities of the Governor's Office of Telecommunications, are far, far broader than anything involving the small Earth Station program. The representations in behalf of the state of Alaska before the Federal Communications Commission, I don't think that anyone would deny that those have been to the benefit of all Alaskans. And those are most of those matters before the FCC had nothing at all to do with the question of ownership of the Earth Stations or the small Earth Station program, but with respect to much different matters on a very large scale. And a large portion of the budget request, the GOT, is addressed to that need. And I think that I could discuss those matters with the member from Anchorage, but it doesn't really relate to this bill. Just for the information, the body talking about whether the cost of the satellite earth stations went over $50,000. Those estimates were based on the idea there would not be a telephone message toll unit. The telephone message toll unit was put in, and it was put in at the expense of RCA. And that $71,000 figure is the cost to both RCA Alaskom and the state. And as most members of this legislature know, that in fact a substantial portion of the $5 million appropriation that was the bill referenced by the member of Anchorage is not yet encumbered. And we've recently had some meetings to discuss the status of that appropriation. But I don't think that's what's before the body here. And I think that the function of this committee, while it does have some involvement with the policy decisions involving the small earth stations, has to do with an awful lot of other subjects. So to tie it to that particular program and say that somebody or other's predictions on the cost of that program have been shown to be correct, I don't think is at point here. If anybody's interested, this committee will be meeting here in Juneau this coming, I believe, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. And I think that if any member here were to go to their deliberations, they'd see that they talk about an awful lot more things than the small earth station program, and they provide an awful lot more service and advice to the policymakers within the state of Alaska and the long lines carrier than just on that subject.
Mr. Specking.
Mr. Speaker, every one of the 12 identified regions are represented. There's an unusual situation in that the Arctic Slope, or the North, the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation has asked that because they do have a local government entity up there, which is not true in most of the other regions, that the North Slope Borough represent them, and I believe that there has been someone designated by the borough to represent them before the in the committee, and all the other regions have been in attendance. It's a very active committee.
Is there any other discussion? The question is, shall House Bill 673 pass the House? The members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk may take the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Mr. Urien. Any other member? The clerk may take Mr. Speckin, your vote is registered. The clerk may take the roll.
Yeas, 5 nays, 3 excused.
The bill has passed the House. The clerk read the next item on the calendar.
There is an effective date.
Excuse me. Mr. Miller?
Speaker, I'll move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call on House Bill 692 be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Without objection, the effective date is adopted. Clerk, read the next item on the calendar.
House Bill Number 692 by McKinnon and Rudd, an act requiring notice of charges on checking accounts. The Committee on Commerce has had House Bill 692 under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it do pass with attached amendment. The report was signed by Mr. Bradley, Chairman, concurred in by Bradley, Wallace, Kelly, Rudd, and McKinnon. Having no recommendation, Fisher, Urien, Freeman, and Rode. I have one amendment on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Clerk, read the first amendment.
Amendment Number 1 by the Commerce Committee. Page 1, line 15. After the word furnish, delete each prospective depositor and insert a person wishing to deposit.
Mr. Bradley.
Ms. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the amendment.
Without objection, the amendment's adopted. Does the clerk have other amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Urien, how stand are these? House come to order. Clerk, have additional amendments.
Amendment number 2 by Mr. Urien. Page 1, line 19. Add 4 to read. 4. A bank shall close the account and may refuse service to any customer who consistently shows a record of writing checks on insufficient funds.
Mr. Urien.
I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the amendment.
Objections noted. Mr. Urien.
Mr. Speaker, it appears to me that this is the only way we're going to be able to protect the people of the state who consistently get burnt on insufficient funds. I think the people that abuse the privilege of a checking account should be punished, and the banks should close the accounts.
Mr. Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I know that the representative from Anchorage is in business as I am in Fairbanks, and he has probably been burned by bad check artists, and so have I. There's a fellow that's somewhere on the west coast of the United States that I hope that the FBI finds that has been wallpapering all this state and 5 others with bad checks. But I don't think that this bill is the appropriate vehicle to address this problem. There is existing law on this subject. I think this bill was intended for something else by the sponsors. And it might be that we should revamp our laws relating to drawing upon insufficient funds, but if we do, it ought to go through the usual committee scrutiny and then get out on the floor of this House. So I'll vote against the amendment.
Mr. Cotton. Clerk, read the amendment again.
Amendment number 2 by Mr. Urien. Page 1, line 19. Add 4 to read. 4. A bank shall close the account and may refuse service to any customer who consistently shows a record of writing checks on insufficient funds.
Mr. Cotton.
I guess I have a question. You're saying that the bank shall close the account when the customer continually draws insufficient funds. Are you telling the banks that they have to close the account after 1, 2, or how many times do they get?
We'll give them 2 times.
Mr. Naughton.
is parliamentary inquiry. Does this amendment fit in the title of this bill?
I think it perhaps would depend on what the purpose of the bill is. The purpose appears to be attempting to get at charges that are imposed on a checking account. I suppose one way of obviating those charges would be telling a bank they simply can't do it. You can't sit there and ding a person $5 a check for 20 checks. So I suppose in that context it does fit. Mr. Cotton.
Am I wrong in assuming then that the banks don't have that option now to close an account out and refuse service if someone is continually delinquent?
Any other discussion? Mr. Brown.
Well, it's an indication that someone was not ready to jump up immediately with an answer to Mr. Cotton's question that this kind of a problem should be addressed in committee. It's where those questions can be raised. If none of us are quite sure as to what the law is on that subject, we shouldn't be tacking an amendment on the bill right now. And I'm sure that any interested committee would be interested in sponsoring a bill regarding the subject addressed by the representative from Anchorage. But if we don't know the answer to that question, we shouldn't vote for the amendment.
Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, I don't know exactly what the intent of the amendment is, but it is a criminal act right now under Section 112210 to issue a check with insufficient funds. And in fact, if you don't report it within 2 days to the bank, you would be guilty of a misdemeanor with a fine of up to $1,000 and imprisonment of up to 1 year. Of course, maybe this is a problem enforcing this because people write bad checks and skip out of town, but I don't think that Mr. Urien's amendment would do anything in that regard. And I think the way I understood it being read, it just merely makes it discretionary as to whether the banks are going to give some person with a bad record checking account in the future. And I would imagine that they can refuse anybody they want right now.
Mr. Speckin. Sullivan.
Mr. Speaker, this is the second banking bill that I've seen in recent days before us, and Mr. Bradley said yesterday that there are a number of, in his words, hardcore banking bills residing still in his committee. Seems to me we're being pretty tough on banks lately. Now, I know on insufficient fund checks, the banks have a standard procedure, and it probably costs them a few cents to process those. I also know that they charge around $5 a piece anytime you write those. Seems to me that's a money-making procedure for the banks, and if we eliminate this source of revenue for them, it seems to me we're really being unnecessarily hard.
Which way are you arguing on the amendment? And that's a pro-banking position? Is there any other discussion? Question is, shall amendment number 2 pass the House? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
The amendment fails. Clerk, have other amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Speaker, Mr. I ask unanimous consent that House Bill 692 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Hearing no objection, House Bill 692 is advanced from second to third reading, placed in final passage. Clerk, read the bill for the third and final time.
House Bill number 692 amended by McKinnon and Rudd, an act requiring notice of charges on checking accounts.
Bills before you for discussion and debate. Question is, shall House Bill 692 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. If any member failed to vote, clerk may close the roll. Any member wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
Yeas, 11 nays, 2 excused.
House Bill 692 has passed the House. Clerk, read the next item on the calendar.
House Bill number 833 by Parker, an act relating to the abatement of nuisances. The Committee on Judiciary has had House Bill 833 under consideration. The members of the committee recommend it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 833 with the same title and that it be reported back with individual recommendations. The report was signed by Mr. Gardner, Chairman, signing Dupass, Gardner, and Brown. Having no recommendation, Cotton and Specking. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Miller.
Speaker, I'll move and ask unanimous consent that Judiciary Committee substitute be accepted in lieu of the original bill.
Hearing no objection, the Judiciary Committee substitute is adopted. Clerk, does the clerk have amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Urien seeking the floor. House Standards.
By Mr. Urien. Page 1, between lines 7 and 8, insert a new section 1 to read. Section 1, Public Findings. A. The public finds that the legislature is the greatest nuisance in the state of Alaska. B. The legislature hates to admit the facts, but in order to survive has determined it must act. Renumber Section 1, Section 2, and Section 3. Page 1 and 2, starting on line 23, delete all new material and insert, if a person has submitted a formal request to the department that it take action to abate a form of political pollution or legislative degradation declared to be a nuisance under this chapter, and that request either has been rejected or the department has not responded to the request within 30 days after it has been submitted, nothing in this chapter affects the right to bring an action to abate that political pollution or legislative degradation as a nuisance. A person bringing the action need not show injury different in kind or in degree from that sustained by the general public to prevail.
Mr. Urien.
I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the amendment.
I didn't hear any. Is there an objection? Mr. Urien, you wish
Mr.
to talk.
Mr. Speaker, this is my futile attempt to protect the public of the state of Alaska from the nonsense that goes on in this body.
Mr. Speaker. Mr. Gardner. Mr. Brown.
Did you say futile attempt or futile attempt?
We'll declare the amendment out of order. The clerk have other amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Miller.
Speaker, in the absence of further nuisances, I'll move and ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for House Bill 833 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Hearing no objection, committee substitute for House Bill 833 is advanced from second to third reading, placed on final passage. Will the clerk read the bill for the third and final time?
Committee substitute for House Bill number 833 by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to the abatement of nuisances.
Bills before you, discussion and debate. Is there any discussion? Mr. Wallace. Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Speaker, what this bill does is it gives an individual standing in court for an abatement of a nuisance, which is a form of limited form of pollution. Now, one of the things the committee did was we made sure that this is only going to apply to somebody that lives in an area that is affected by the pollution. This doesn't give anybody outside a specific area or outside the state any standing in court. There was some question as to whether individuals might actually have standing now to enforce abatement of a nuisance, and was somewhat questioned. That question really hasn't been answered by the Supreme Court of this state right now. One other thing that we changed was we required the person who wanted to protest a case of pollution, for instance, that he would first have to contact the Department of Environmental Conservation or a municipality if that municipality had environmental powers, and that they would have to take action one way or the other before the person could file any suit. And then if the department or the municipality failed to file suit, then the individual would have the right to go to court. And of course, the court would determine then first whether he had any standing to file a suit, and then later on the merits of the case. And I think this is what it's mainly directed at small environmental suits that the department, either for possibly some political reasons somewheres in the administration, or that they're just overworked, that they're not able to handle these smaller cases. I think we all know that, see from time to time in the paper, large oil spills or other kinds of cases. The Department of Environmental Conservation does have the Attorney General's office enforce the state's laws, but in other smaller cases, this isn't necessarily so because of the time and money restraints of the resources of the state.
Mr. Parker.
Mr. Speaker, to embroider a little further on that, the current law makes a distinction between public and private nuisance, and that boils down to the case as it's been interpreted, such as this: if there's a stream on your property that's being polluted by someone upstream, it's a private nuisance if you can show, for example, that you take water out of it to drink. But if you're trying to show that the fish are being killed in the stream by the pollution, becomes a public nuisance because the fish, of course, are a public resource. The person then who sees that has a right, of course, to complain and go through the red tape process of making a formal complaint to the Department of Environmental Conservation, who, if they agree with you, in turn ask the Department of Law to prosecute. The trouble is, of course, is that there are so many examples of those kind of complaints around the state that the departments have to pick and choose as to which ones are worth putting higher on the list of priorities. So, as oftentimes could happen, the stream that we talked about earlier could wind up way down on the list of priorities behind the huge oil spills and so forth that Mr. Gardner spoke about. And the result is that the individual has done all he can by simply making the formal complaint. This bill would add to his rights that if the formal complaint was either rejected or there was no action within 30 days, he himself could go to court in the name of the public and take action against the offender. Both the commissioner of the Department of Environmental Conservation and the assistant attorney general speaking for the Department of Law agreed that the bill was a good idea, and also that the form of it was good, and I think it'd be a good addition to the rights of the individual.
Other discussion? Question is, shall committee substitute House Bill 833 pass the House? The members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may close the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
Yeas, 6 nays, 2 excused.
Committee substitute for House Bill 833 has passed the House. Clerk, read the next item on the calendar.
Committee substitute for House Bill number 605 by the Finance Committee. An act relating to tax-exempt obligations and providing for an effective date.
Bills before us in third reading. Mr. Brown.
Mr. Speaker, this matter was held over for one day because there were some questions, legal questions, raised on the floor of the House. And I was with Mr. Wallace, one of the members, raising one of those questions, and there are a couple of others that were raised. I communicated this morning with the director of the Legal Services Division of the Legislative Affairs Agency, Mr. Barrier, and he says that we do not have the difficulties we were worried that we might have, and we do have some answers to those questions. He is quite satisfied with the definition relating to a city or borough, and perhaps the question raised by the majority leader might be answered by his comment that if you were to be concerned about whether this would cover unified government, in order to have a unified government be considered a constitutional entity, you have to consider it either a city or a borough, in his view, so that takes care of that problem. Representative Parr was concerned about how this might affect the the federal, any kind of federal obligation or bonds, and it doesn't affect the law on that subject one way or the other, according to him, because this relates only to Section 103 of the Internal Revenue Code of 1954 as amended, and Section 103 does not address in one way or the other any kind of federal bond or obligation issued by the United States government. And in response to Representative Wallace's and my inquiries, because he says that because of the context of Section 103 of the Internal Revenue Code, there would be no question as to what the proper definition of a public corporation is, and that is that it would be the one mentioned on this floor yesterday, a corporation established by the state but presumably separate from the state, or in a quasi-separate position like the Alaska State Housing Authority or conceivably the University of Alaska. So on that basis, I can now vote for the bill, and at least my worries have been assuaged, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Sullivan.
May we be at ease?
I'll stand at ease.
House come to order. Is there other discussion on House Bill 605? Mr. Urien?
Mr. Speaker, I wonder if somebody could tell us how much more revenue this is going to bring into the state through the income tax method.
Mr. McKinnon.
Mr. Speaker, the Department of Revenue couldn't really come up with an accurate figure on it. In the fiscal note, they said it may be $50,000. But as was pointed out in the fiscal note by the department, the important thing is that we eliminate the incentive in our tax laws for people to invest in the obligations of other states.
Mr. Ewing.
Mr. Speaker, that's certainly a good intent, trying to discourage Alaskans from investing outside and therefore encouraging them to invest within Alaska. But it somewhat upsets me because Alaska, being a capital poor state, has always had to sell its bonds outside to other people. And we have to encourage other people to invest in Alaska. And therefore, I think that just so we can reciprocate just a little bit, we should allow our citizens the freedom to invest outside. For $50,000, I think we're going to do ourselves more harm in public relations than this bill's worth.
Mr. Speaker, there are 35 other states that tax the municipal obligations obligations other than their own, and we'd simply be the 36th state. It's standard practice, and I don't see what Mr. Urien's problem with it is.
Mr. Urien.
Mr. Speaker, those 35 other states have a lot more in-state capital than the state of Alaska. They can take care of themselves. We can't take care of ourselves. We need outside capital. And I'm somewhat reminded of the commandment that says something like, do unto others as you'd have them do unto you.
Mr. Naughton.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to suggest that 2 million barrels of oil a day and billions of tons of coal are sufficient reciprocity.
Mr. Brown.
Mr. Speaker, my understanding is that the bond ratings for both our local governments and the state of Alaska are an awful lot better than most of those other states, particularly some on the East Coast and some municipalities on the East Coast.
Any other discussion? Question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 605 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Any member fail to vote, clerk may close the roll. Any member wish to change his vote? Clerk may take the roll.
Yeas, 8 nays, 2 excused.
Committee substitute, House Bill 605 has passed the House. Does have an effective date. Mr. Miller.
Speaker, I'll move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call on committee substitute for House Bill 605 be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Without objection, then the effective date clause is adopted. Brings us to the end of the calendar to unfinished business. Is there anything to come before the House unfinished business? Special orders. Mr. Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I'm still writing down estimates from anyone on what they think is going to happen in Florida today.
Mr. Miller.
Mr. Speaker, I'll move and ask unanimous consent I'd be allowed to speak on matters relating to communications between the outside and Alaska.
Without objection.
Mr. Speaker, I had intended today to deliver what some people call a screamer on what I think was going to be a great leap back into the Middle Ages, and that was that the live broadcast, which we've only had for a short time in Alaska, and which we've all come to enjoy very much, are threatened. Indeed, yesterday, according to the news reports, they were zilch. They were dead, zapped. But my information from Representative Brown is that due to some last-minute negotiations and perhaps even RCA paying an exorbitant fee, we do indeed still have live news coming to us from outside. I think it, once again, Mr. Speaker, we're in the ridiculous position of being in the bite of the line, the recipients of really bad news as a result of factors that are totally beyond our control. It would appear that, at least from the news accounts, that we stand to lose our live coverage, which every other state in the Union enjoys, on the news, if not the rest of the TV programming, because of disputes between RCA and Western Union, and apparently the FCC, as usual, is into the thing. Mr. Speaker, I rise somewhat in frustration because really there isn't anything we can do on this floor except, take it in the side of the head like we always have, but it's very distressing. I'm hopeful that we can do the one thing that we usually do, and sometimes helps a little bit. I'm hopeful that the Telecommunications Select Committee perhaps can put together a resolution that at least expresses the sense of urgency that Alaskans feel in this matter, and urging all parties to move just as expeditiously as they can to move from a temporary arrangement to a return to a permanent arrangement. We should be moving forward in this area. We should be bringing Alaska, all areas of Alaska, into the 20th century. Instead, it looks like we're going to, as I mentioned before, move the other way if something isn't done. So I would make that request to the Select Telecommunications Committee and hope that something could be done.
Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent to respond to the remarks of the gentleman from Juneau.
You have the floor.
Mr. Speaker, I agree very much with the Majority Leader. What is happening, according to my information, is that at the 11th hour, RCA entered into a special arrangement with Western Union to obtain the use of another satellite transponder. And I'm not sure of the reliability of the next part of the information, but I believe, or I suspect, that as a result, RCA Alaskom is taking quite a financial bath as a result to maintain this this service to Juneau, Fairbanks, and Anchorage. And I think that this is totally unnecessary. I addressed the members of this body 2 weeks ago when the FCC did decide the interim authority, continuing the Alaskan service on Westar 2. What they did, essentially, was they told the RCA companies that they could only use the SATCOM F1 RCA satellite that went up on the 13th of December if they could bifurcate the service. There's another word for Mr. Parker, but that was the FCC's word, between Alaskan service and lower 48 service, and they could put the lower 48 service on the RCA satellite, but they couldn't put the Alaska and Alaska 2 outside service on the RCA satellite. The Western Union satellite, by anyone's measure, is not as economical or as technically capable as either the RCA or AT&T satellites, and it was just the FCC deciding again not to decide a case and postponing things all over again. Now, yesterday I heard from the director of the governor's office of telecommunications in a meeting in the governor's office that at least counsel for the state of Alaska suspects that the signs are that the FCC will finally decide the more permanent interim authority, or maybe the permanent authority, within about 2 months. But there's no reason for all of this delay, and I believe that it would be appropriate for us to pass a resolution, and I will ask Legislative Affairs to prepare an appropriate resolution sponsored by the Select Committee on Telecommunications, essentially directed to RCA, AT&T, and the FCC, and asking them to get their act together.
Mr. Speckin. You may.
Now, this is uncertain whether or not this should have been under announcements or under special orders as much as a warning feature was given. In any event, I've been reminded by Commissioner Motley that the Adam Smith Day party is today, Tuesday, 4:30 p.m., the ninth floor of the State Office Building. It says, skip refreshment, legislators are urged to attend to protect themselves. Thank you, Speaker.
Get our curiosity up enough to go over there. Way of an announcement and touching a bit on what Mr. Miller, Mr. Brown indicated, we're tentatively planning the first television coverage of legislative sessions in Alaska for the 17th and the 18th of March. And we're attempting to make those arrangements now with the telecommunications division. The recent events have made that perhaps a little more tentative, because the rates have gone up, and apparently also RCA no longer may grant free time or a reduced rate of any kind for public coverage, which complicates things a bit. But tentatively, we're planning one day for the Senate and one day for the House, and would probably be in the afternoon so that the coverage would be in current time slots up north, so the body can be advised to be in their best form and on that day. Committee announcements. Mr. Anderson. Mr. Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, Community and Regional Affairs will meet tomorrow morning at 9. We won't be meeting tonight. On our calendar tomorrow, we have HCR 110 and HB 860 and House Bill 796, all dealing with the Village Safe Water Act. Also, House Bill 797 and 798, dealing with studies of alternatives for sewer projects.
Mr. McKenna.
State Affairs will meet at 1:30 this afternoon. We'll be taking up House Bill 277. Tax exemptions from municipal property tax. House Bill 590, a supplemental to the Department of Military Affairs. House Bill 717, instruction centers and public buildings. House Bill 771, appropriation of the Department of Highways. And House Concurrent Resolution 86, blacktopping the Nome Belts High School Road.
Mr. Brown.
Mr. Speaker, the Select Committee on Telecommunications will be meeting just to meet with and talk to the head of the Public Service Satellite Consortium at 6 o'clock this evening in room 207 of the assembly, and if it's a small enough group, we'll just move to room 206 and have coffee or something. This is an organization, it's a very important, growing organization made up of people who are in public television and using satellite for public broadcasting purposes and for other public service purposes, I believe, including health services, throughout the United States. And I'm sure that the members of the committee will want to attend, and I invite any other interested member of the legislature to attend.
Mr. Bradley.
Mr. Speaker, House Commerce tomorrow, 8 a.m., will be taking up House Bill 837, appropriation to the Alaska Energy Allocation, and HCR 100, dealing with the utility regulation.
Mr. Gardner.
The Judiciary will meet at 1:15 on House Bill 799,
Mr. Malone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The House Finance Committee will meet for subcommittee work this afternoon and tomorrow morning. 7:30 p.m. this evening, we'll meet to take up House Bill 528, creating an advisory committee for the marine highways. House Bill 582 by the governor, dealing with regulation of insurance. House Bill 583, oil and bill that sets the date on the oil and gas transportation of pipeline property tax collection. House Bill 646, which is referred to finance today by the governor, dealing with state contracts. House Bill 675, tax on motor fuel for watercraft, and House Joint Resolution 39, dealing with Alaska Permanent Fund.
Mr. Parr.
Mr. Speaker, the Select Committee on Education will meet at 3 o'clock this afternoon, taking up House Bill 763, which is foundation plan for the Aleutian Chain, and then markup sessions on 708 and 709, which are the student internship program, and 715, which student loans.
Mr. Miller.
Speaker, a couple of brief announcements. Number one, the flowers, which are to the rear, the yellow flowers back there, are a gift from Flick of Red, who's a very nice lady that every year sends flowers to the legislature, and we're most appreciative of that. Mr. Speaker, the Democratic luncheon tomorrow, not today, but I'm just giving everybody a little advance notice, will have its speaker, Representative Kay Poland. If there's no further announcements to come before the body, Mr. Speaker, I'll move and ask unanimous consent. We stand in adjournment until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Without objection, the House is in adjournment.